Stay tuned for Time to Talk with host Jennifer Graziano of Zion Memorial Chapel and Cox and Graziano Funeral Homes. Jennifer is here to discuss a sensitive subject we all need to talk and think about. Here now is Jennifer Graziano and Time to Talk.
Good afternoon, Westchester. It's 12 noon on Wednesday, and that means it's time to talk with me, Jen Graziano. I'm a licensed funeral director who oversees my family's funeral homes, Cox and Graziano of both Mamaroneck and Greenwich, and the Zion Memorial Chapel of Westchester. Every Wednesday, I come to you discussing important topics and sensitive matters that all of us need to pause and reflect upon at some point, and through this show, I hope to provide a platform to do so. Good afternoon to our listeners on 1460 WVOX, and hello to Gerald and everyone in the control room. And welcome back, Facebook Live viewers, our second show of the day. Thank you, Tim. Talking about, once again, very, very important subjects. Earlier this morning, we spoke about geriatric depression and later-in-life depression, and we segue now into another very sensitive, very rough topic, but something nonetheless that merits our attention and awareness. We'll be speaking about elder abuse, its recognition, its prevention, and ways that we can spot the signs and also maybe give caregivers the support that they need. So lots that we'll be discussing today with Nicole Brunelli, my guest. She is the Elder Abuse Prevention Coordinator for Family Services of Westchester. Welcome, Nicole.
Thank you for having me.
I am happy to have you with us. We've had representatives from Family Services before. I think we should start by just letting people know what exactly Family Services is, the nature of the organization, and I know you do a lot of services, but just tell us a little bit.
So Family Services of Westchester is a nonprofit. In Westchester. We have over 50 different programs for all different ages. All different ages, and there's tons for youth, tons for seniors. It goes all over.
We have every age and stage, right?
Every age and stage. We have offices all over the county as well. My particular program is the Elder Abuse Program. It's one of several senior programs that we have.
Okay.
And so we just provide seniors with lots of support who are at risk of being abused or are currently being abused.
You know, it's so hard. First of all, abuse takes on so many forms. You know, sometimes the word just makes us think physical, but emotional, verbal, psychological, they are all, in fact, ways in which somebody can be abused. And oftentimes, probably the biggest problem you see faced is that a victim's don't self-identify, or they don't come for help, or they don't report, or they probably, you know, in this vulnerable population we're speaking about of seniors, they probably don't even realize that they're falling under this category of an elder abuse victim. So let's just start at the beginning. Obviously, we call it elder abuse because we're talking about somebody in later years. Is it 65 and older, they say?
So it's actually in Westchester, it's 60 and older.
60 and older.
But Mount Seems Vernon is 50 and older.
Really?
Yes.
Is there a reason for the categorical difference?
So Mount Vernon, we get funding through Mount Vernon Community Block Grant, and they want it to be 50.
I guess they just recognize that this is a problem that's, you know, that is being faced, and if there's funds there, why not help more people? It's
exactly.
Understandable.
And also they can have physical challenges, mental challenges as well at 50 that make them more vulnerable.
So. You can ignore that, Sam, for all of our 50 listeners. I'm not that.
Some of them, not everybody.
We're all not that far behind you. How would you define the term elder abuse, though? From your clinical perspective,
So it's really can be a single or repeated pattern. Sometimes it's an isolated event where there's some kind of harm done to a senior in those age ranges, and it has to be by a person in a position of trust. So that's your caregiver, but that can be like a family or a very close friend.
So it's somebody that you trust. It's somebody in a position, in a close relationship, in a position where they're able to inflict this harm. And you say it can be an isolated or it can be recurring.
Yes.
Let's talk a bit about the types of people that tend to be the perpetrator. So you said caregiver.
Yes.
This can be somebody of familial nature. It could be a family member, or it can be somebody that you hire from an agency. And Nicole, I'm sure you see this. There are so many agencies out there for home health care. And through the show, I have caused to meet lots of people involved in this. And my message is always the same. Vetting, going through proper screenings, investigating backgrounds, not going with the first agency that you see, trusting your gut. Talk a little bit about some of the problems you've encountered in your position through abuse, exercise through home care agencies.
So actually my program doesn't work with home care agencies.
Okay.
But we do get referrals for it all the time, so we've kind of created this method of how we kind of encourage people to work with it. We do advise calling the ombudsman because that is like the basis. They will investigate.
What is that called?
The ombudsman.
The ombudsman.
Yes.
Can you spell that? That's like a word. Is that a name or a?
It's a position through New York Connects. It's specifically for like nursing homes, hospitals to file complaints, healthcare agencies.
Okay.
I do, if you have a problem also with your home healthcare aide, it's also, if it's a like a physical, you know, like a slap, a hit, shaking, or like a theft of property, that's also good to call the police. I know a lot of people don't want to get the police involved.
Right. And again, you know, they're scared. They're relying on somebody for care and for help. And, you know, they might be afraid that the abuse will become worse, or, you know, again, they might not realize that this is not okay. You don't have to accept this. You can. It's so, so hard to try to raise the level of awareness to seniors that, and that's the biggest message of our show today. You don't have to be treated badly. You should not be treated badly by anyone. And there are resources to help you. So if you or someone you know or love are listening to this and it's striking a chord, we really want you to take note of what you can do to get yourself out of a harmful situation. No one should be treated badly. So talk about the types of calls that really come into your office that you're handling on a day-to-day basis.
So we get a lot of financial abuse cases, financial exploitation.
Like the phone scams? And
we do get a lot of phone scams. Unfortunately, there's really nothing that can be done.
Other than just not providing the information over the phone.
A lot of education. It has to come from a preventative standpoint and not... Okay.
We can't stop the calls. I mean, that's all. I mean, it was even on the news a couple of weeks ago that the amount of cell phone scams are just your phone rings all day. And they say that, first of all, not answering a number that you don't recognize is a good tip, because once you answer, it shows the number is active and people can continue to call. So, again, great tip. If you don't know who's calling, don't answer. If it's important, they'll leave you a message
and call back.
Absolutely. Never, ever, ever give any personal information over the phone. The IRS is not going to call you. I spent 48 minutes on hold with the post office yesterday trying to call for a lost package. I can guarantee you no government agency is calling you. Their phone lines are tied up. But don't give out social security numbers, date of birth, maiden name for women, those key questions. Those are for in-person dialogues or if you're filling out, you know, information firsthand, but never give it over the phone.
Never.
And, you know, that common scam of it's my grandson or granddaughter, I'm sure you tell them hang up and verify, right?
I actually was at a client's house when they got it.
Oh, wow.
And it was terrifying for them. And it was really interesting to watch it happen. And
yeah, no, I'm sure it gave you a whole new person. You're right place at the right time.
I was. And at first, even I was, like, questioning it. But we slowed it down, and we called the grandchild to see if they were home. And they were home, and then we kind of went from there.
That is unbelievable. Because you know what? I'm with any grandparent, they just... they worry about their grandkids, and their instinct is just whatever you need, you know, I'll give it to you.
Yeah.
So, and that's why the scam is so effective, because they're preying on what matters most to a vulnerable person. But again, hang up, independently verify, contact the grandchild or their parent, you know, your child. Again, this is it's all about prevention, because we can't stop the calls from coming, but we can kind of alter our responses. So if you're just joining us this afternoon on 1460 VOX, WVOX, or Facebook Live, I'm speaking with Nicole Bernali, the Elder Abuse Prevention Coordinator for Family Services of Westchester. And we're talking about defining abuse. And Nicole had said it can be isolated incidents, it can be repeated incidents, and it's done by there's a victim and then there's a person in a trusted position who is perpetrating the abuse. And that right there is the indicator that abuse is in fact taking place. So let's talk about some characteristics. We know the victim characteristics, that they're vulnerable. They're in need of care, in need of support, possibly frail, if not physically, in somewhat of a dependent mental state. But what are characteristics of the abusers in your, from your perspective?
So primarily, it's adult children or grandchildren, at least in what I see.
Are the abusers?
Are the abusers.
Wow.
It's horrible, but
how,
it happens.
How so? I mean, I'm not, I know how it's horrible, but how so are they the abusers?
A lot of them are financially dependent for various reasons. A lot of times there's some kind of addiction going on, alcohol, drugs, gambling even.
And they're using the funds and the money of the senior. So again, you know, when you think of that, a lot of people might not couch that behavior into abuse. You might think, I'm just helping my son or daughter or my grandson or daughter. And again, you as the parent and grandparent feel that's your job. But that consistent financial drain and that consistent taking of money, that's not okay. And if the money is going for a purpose like that, like you say, to fuel an addiction or a bad habit, or even just, you know, for one's own personal satisfaction and gain, that is a form of elder abuse, of financial elder abuse.
Yes. And it's even a lot of times they'll say, oh, my kids need new clothes, or my kids need new cars or a new apartment. And, you know, a gift here and there is one thing, but a continuous drain.
So how do you tell them where the line in the sand gets drawn when you are brought into these situations?
I don't like to tell them where it is. We kind of work together. We do this. It's important two and it's important four. So an important two is their wants and preferences. So it's important to them. But then important four is like important for their safety and what's going to keep them safe. And so we try to find that balance, because if we give them all this information, and yes, it keeps them safe, but it's not what they want, it's not going to do anything.
Right.
So it's really working with them to figure out what they want.
Some of the indicators of abuse. Is that an example of an indicator when you, you know, the excessive request for money? What are some other indicators?
Especially for financial abuse is like eviction notices coming. If you have a friend and all of us, you were going out to coffee every Wednesday morning, and then all of a sudden your friend can't afford to go out for coffee anymore, those things are kind of, you could pick up on maybe where's the money going.
So looking at the signs, again, a lot of this requires us taking inventory of the elders in our life. And looking for things such as they no longer have money on a, you know, you can forget your wallet one day, but when it's kind of a repeated not having funds for things that they once always had funds for. You know, something like that. Again, I just find that most people wouldn't really think of that as something as, you know, they might be suffering from abuse. What are some of the other more tangible signs?
So if for physical, it'd be injuries that kind of don't make sense with the story you're getting. Very similar. We all know about what to look for in like children. Very similar for physical abuse in seniors. Emotional, verbal, even physical is when the senior story doesn't match with like the caregiver story. If they're giving two different stories, that's something to be suspicious over. Kind of a caregiver saying, well, they don't know what they're talking about. Even if they do and you know they know, they might try to convince you. Or even they could convince the senior that they don't know what they're talking about.
So much of this requires trusting your gut and your instinct. Mm-hmm. And if you are the adult child or grandchild of a senior with a caregiver, it's incumbent upon you to trust and verify. You have to, you know, whether it be spot checks, you know, random checks in the house to monitor the behavior firsthand, monitor the interactions, whether it be, you know, I always say too, the vetting process, starting the search for home companions before the need actually arises.
Yes.
You know, when you come out of a hospital, you're in crisis mode. You're trying to get the person back home and you're trying to get the proper care in. And, you know, when you have people working or with young families, it's hard for them to give care to their aging parents. So you just kind of, the tendency might be just to get someone to fill that position without researching the options. Again, home care agencies, they are rampant, and there has to be more than just getting a body in the room. You have to look at background checks. Don't be afraid to ask questions. And if something doesn't sound right and doesn't add up, like you said, it's probably not.
Exactly.
So what is some services that your program provides for people who have been victims of elder abuse?
So we do a lot of supportive counseling. So I'll go one-on-one counseling with them for a temporary basis. I'll provide, if they want it more long-term, I can provide them with referrals for people that'll come into their home so they don't even have to leave.
Okay.
I can do a lot of referrals to transportation, housing is another big one. Senior centers, community centers, so they're not as isolated, have interactions with people. We do a support group in White Plains 2 times a month. The first
for people who have been victims of this,
Or just at risk, think they're vulnerable. They're more than welcome to come. It's the first and the third Wednesdays.
Okay, we'll talk about
or Tuesdays sometimes.
So we'll talk. We'll remind people later in the show as to where this help can be obtained.
Yep.
Do you have a particular kind of approach when providing services to older adults? I mean, is it your background is in counseling and therapy and mental health, but do you have a different approach to dealing with seniors?
It's a lot of kind of listening to their wants. They and anybody who's experiencing abuse, it's listening to them and their story and what they need and want, because they know their life the best. I know nothing about them. I know just little pieces. But really, it comes down to them making those decisions and just kind of supporting them, giving them options, pointing out things that they might not see.
Right.
But still letting them make the decision.
Right. What are some of the challenges that seniors face in Westchester County trying to get help? Is it more that they just don't come forward and identify as victims? Is that the biggest challenge, or is it that you recognize there's a problem and finding a solution for it?
There's some challenges. Westchester's huge. Services are spread out. So some of them can access, like transportation is a really big thing for a lot of the seniors. Paratransit's great. But if they can't, they don't have somebody to go with them if they're in a wheelchair, then it's very challenging to use paratransit. Some of them can't afford taxis. So getting them to the services is a bit of a challenge. But then also, yes, them not recognizing that they need them.
So is that one of the reasons that somebody might not seek help or assistance, like the ability to get to help? Or, you know, is it also just because the stigma that's involved? You don't want to say that you're a victim. You don't want to get anybody in trouble. You don't want to complain to your children, or you don't want, you know, for some people, perhaps it's maybe they're afraid their children will move them out of their home and into a facility. Talk a little bit about how we remove this barrier and this stigma so that people do come forward.
A lot of it is education. I've had a lot of people tell me they don't realize that violence can happen in their household, except with their spouse. Like they remember like domestic violence and just think people in their 20s and 30s, newlyweds. They don't realize it can be their children, their grandchildren, their husband or wife into their 80s. I know people that are 90 and just getting divorced because of abuse.
Wow.
But even their caregivers, the people that come, like the aides, they're afraid they're going to get in trouble. They're afraid that people are going to convince them that, You know, they're forgetting things or making things up. They're afraid their children, if it's not the children, it is this caregiver from an agency, they're convinced the caregiver is going to convince their child that they're making things up. And then a lot of it is also a fear of a nursing home.
Right.
That they're terrified of nursing homes.
Right.
I hear it all the time.
And that's sad, too. You mean nowadays? I mean, and you can understand no one wants to leave their home, but nowadays the options around are so much better than they were before. So sometimes that's feared, but if we can remove that stigma, too, you know, they might, it might be, sometimes it might be the better answer.
Yeah.
What are some of the resources that are offered from your program? So it's the counseling. Are there any fee for these services? You have your support groups. Any fee-based?
They're all free.
Okay.
It doesn't matter about income. That's another question I get. It doesn't matter with income. Everything's free. But the counseling is kind of temporary. I see people about 6 months to a year usually. And so it's, you know.
But the programs going to the support groups can be ongoing?
Yeah. The support group after those 6 months to a year or whenever you've had your, like, needs met, referrals are done, case management needs are done, you can continue coming to the support group.
Do you find that the numbers of members of the groups are growing? Do you find more of a, you know, when people in your organization maybe have been there longer, is it more of a, are there more bodies in the room and the seats? Are people speaking up a little bit more now than they perhaps were before?
It goes in waves. We're low right now, but it, a lot of it is that right now it's hard to find us a group space that everybody can access because it has to be handicap accessible.
Right.
A lot of seniors don't want to drive at night, and that's when a lot of these spaces are open.
Right, right, right.
And also, we're realizing, like, the conflicting message we're sending of home visits, because all my work is done in home visits, so that they don't have to come out anywhere that they don't feel comfortable, but then we're going to ask them to come.
Right. But hopefully by that point, I mean, they're going to the group after they've had the visit, so after they've had the rapport built with you and they have the trust in you, when you're able to say, okay, it's time to go on to the group setting, you know, perhaps that it's different than if they off the bat had to come and do that. After the six months, you know, you've probably earned their trust.
Exactly.
Talk a bit about caregivers who unintendedly inflict abuse. You know, caregiving is a very stressful role. Oftentimes, caregivers are giving care on top of full-time employment, raising their own children. There could be a human nature-induced tendency to just snap, even with your raising your voice. And again, I'm sure not intended, but talk a bit about caregivers and the need for them to have support to enable them to give better care.
Yeah, there's definitely a need. There's actually a they call it active or passive neglect. And active neglect is when you're intentionally neglecting, intentionally withholding food, medication, any needs, you're intentionally doing it. But passive is more of when you don't realize what you're doing.
Right.
You might not have had the most education on how to care for, like, a wound, or you know that there's medications really have to be taken at these times, so you're not intentionally doing it. So while it's still bad, it's a little bit easier to work with, because you probably don't want to continue in this pattern. You want that help. So there are tons of like caregiver support groups available throughout the county. If your loved one is in, like, a rehab or a nursing home, they oftentimes, not everyone, but a lot of them do have their own support groups that you can go to. Seeking your own counseling is beneficial, and kind of calling around and seeing if there's other services, because there are a lot of free services in the county, not just with my program, but there's a lot of other, even FSW has a lot of other programs.
You know, we always talk about Westchester and then the taxes that we pay here, which are quite significant, but there are great services as well, so take advantage of them. You're here, you're a resident here. Free services available to you for caregiver support, but also, again, for elder abuse prevention. It's not okay to be mistreated at any age of your life or at any stage of your life, but there are things that can be done. Again, if you find yourself giving excess money to family members, you don't have to do that. If you find caregivers in your home or health aides or companions that are speaking harshly or mishandling you physically or just speaking down to you, you don't have to undergo that. So Family Services of Westchester, Nicole herself, and the organization at large, they are here to help. And really, Family Services runs the gamut of services, like we say, every age and every stage. But tell us again, there are programs available for elder abuse prevention victims. Yeah. Can we go on a website and find this out or get information to call you?
So you can go on the Family Services of Westchester website.
Which is?
I believe it's just familieservicesofwestchester.org.
Okay. FSW.
Yeah, it's short. And you can,
yeah. Okay, Family Services Westchester. And is there a phone number for you?
Yes. My phone number is 914-668-9124, extension 28.
We'll repeat that. That's 914-668-9124, extension 28 for Nicole Brunali, the Elder Abuse Prevention Coordinator at Family Services Westchester.
The only thing is don't leave any kind of referral information on there. Just we don't want it to get into like the wrong hands if something were to ever happen. So just leave your name, a phone number, and just
and
ask me
will
to
call you back.
And I'll call you back.
Okay,
next time
so no personal information left on a message. Nicole, thank you for the good work you're doing. We hope people will come forward and get help if needed. And this is Jen Graziano thanking you for taking the time to listen as we took the time to talk. Have a great day, Westchester. Bye-bye.